The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Yes, it is, and welcome back. 602-508-0960. If we go back, Bill, I wanted to ask you if you could load up or get ready that PragerU thing we talked about earlier. If I could go back, I said this was Education Day. If I could go back to things I was saying in the first hour, particularly in my monologue and thereafter, the incident from September at ASU where two black students who were female verbally assaulted two white students who were male, as the Arizona Republic reported today, there have been no punishments. There have been no sanctions. There was a warning given as two white students were told they could not stay. They had to leave a facility at ASU, a facility you pay for. ASU is a public university, let me remind you. It's also a facility. It's also an institution that is under the Federal Civil Rights Acts, which declare that you cannot discriminate based on race. You have one of the students who chased out one of the female students who chased out one of the male students saying in the Arizona Republic, quote, "I realize I no longer want to continue to build a ladder for minorities to this institution because this institution is a violently racist and uninclusive space for minorities." Does anyone have an example of violent racism at ASU? Does anyone have an example of ASU being an uninclusive space for minorities? Understand what this student is saying. She wants a building that's non-inclusive for certain students based on their skin color. If anyone's being under or uninclusive, it's the students who chased – it's the black students who chased out the white ones. And what's interesting further – about this, as I was in the monologue in the first hour talking about basically the entire stream of civil rights and education moving in one direction starting in the 1950s and building into a tide and flood of integration and integrationist attitudes and approaches to education, that is to say, having children or students of different races study together, engage with one another. This was the ethic that informed, of course, Brown versus Board and everything that came from it. Think about what's happening to a society that continually wants to separate the races. Think about an education system that wants to resegregate. Do you think at the end of the day that that notion of separating and segregating by race, whatever the motivation, do you think that that will lead to a better understanding of that which multicultural centers were designed to do? This all took place at a multicultural center. Whites were not allowed at the multicultural center, according to these two black students, and so they helped usher them out because they were white. Do you even understand what the point, I want to ask these students, do you even understand what the point of a multiculturalism center is? What is the point of multiculturalism? Is the point for us to understand each other better or each other's differing cultures and backgrounds better? Or is the point to instantiate a cultural superiority and a cultural inferiority between the cultures? Is it merely to say that we will learn from one another and adopt from one another and integrate together because we have a bigger culture here, a bigger project, something that transcends your race, something that transcends perhaps even your religion or your ethnicity. Is that not the point of multiculturalism? Perhaps that thing might be called an American culture. Perhaps that thing might be called a culture dedicated to sustaining societies that allow multicultural centers. Let's stay on that point for a moment as I'm thinking of it. Societies that allow multicultural centers and societies that don't. That is to say, societies that are open to minority, full minority citizenship or minority rights and those that aren't. It is an interesting thing, is it not? Ironic, if not interesting thing, that it is in the tradition of the West, that which the neo-Marxists want to punish and eradicate. It is the very function of freedom of religion, never mind freedom of the individual, but freedom of religion, freedom of the individual, and of course everything that flows from that that you can find in the First Amendment. That is a unique thing to Western society, Western civilization, that we can recognize and welcome and give complete and full rights, as George Washington wrote in his letter to the Touro Synagogue when he was president, to everyone in this country, regardless of race, religion, or any other background. That is a signature of Western civilization and enlightenment achievement. You will not find this. You will not find multiculturalism centers in the majority of countries in the world, in the unfree countries of the world, in non-Western societies. These things are rarities or they're illegal. They just can't happen. They will not happen. So, yeah, when I talk about an American culture or culture of Western civilization, what is it we are trying to put asunder here? What is the angst? What is the anger? What is the pushback and concern about this country not adopting propaganda? Or this country not allowing someone to say all lives indeed do matter? Or allowing someone to have a dissenting political opinion from your own. Let's put it squarely. The reason, the very reason we have majoritarian and minority rights in this country is because of dissent. Because of people who disagreed with one another and argued it out and fleshed it out. That was a unique contribution of the Enlightenment and Western civilization. The idea of debate, the idea of freedom of conscience. That's an interesting thing, which yields, of course, multiculturalism centers. The interesting thing then is now that they are trying to circumscribe that. They are trying to contain and curtail all of that so that multiculturalism centers and multiculturalism in general doesn't stand anymore for learning from other cultures and accepting other cultures by learning from them and realizing, in the phrase of Ilhan Omar and the woke progressive movement in America, we aren't going to other people anymore because we now understand that they are part of, as Lincoln put it, the whole family of man, mankind, if you prefer, the whole family of man. That these things that countries have gone to war over, these things that have led to refugee crises, these things that have led to people fleeing for life and limb to this country had to do with societies that thought tribe and race, what the Greeks called genos, hence the word genocide, the word genos, They are from societies of tribal warfare. They are from societies that didn't view man as man and human as human. They are from societies, these refugees, these wars, these civil wars, these bloody and terrible things, whether we're talking in Africa, the Middle East, or parts of Asia, they have to do with viewing people as members of tribes. Those activities of violence based on that threat and that ideology that thinks skin, tribe, religion, race matters are why people came to America in the first place. It's our plea. It's our pitch that we didn't ask you to leave Somalia or the Sudan to come here and give us the Somalia and Sudan. It was to come here and seek refuge because you were one of the privileged who made it through to safety. And we want to continue to be a place of safety based on the notion that because God made you a person, you have the same claim to freedom as I do. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show, 602-508-0960 is the number. It's an interesting phrase that we use an awful lot around these parts. You probably have used it. And it's a word. The word is woke, W-O-K-E. And I've always found it to be a pregnant word for a lot of reasons. First of all, its origins coming from a black writer in the 1960s in an op-ed in the New York Times describing that wokeness meant nothing more than African Americans, I believe he used the word black in those days, black Americans wanting to be part, seen as part of the rest of society in America and not have separate marketing campaigns aimed at him. He wrote it because he saw an ad campaign in the New York subway system aimed directly at African Americans or blacks, and as the phraseology went then. And he said, "We blacks are awakened, and the woke times have us wanting nothing more than what everyone else wants. You know, a good school for our children, good transportation to our jobs, good jobs." And a safe community for us to raise our families in. In other words, the original use of the term woke was the integrationist philosophy. It was wanting there to be less and less recognition of the separation between the races. That's actually how woke originally was used etymologically. And so it's interesting that only in the last, I don't know, I started noticing this about maybe a month ago. About a month ago, I started noticing that liberals and leftists were saying the word woke should not be used anymore. About 2 months ago, you started seeing articles saying, titled, How the Word Woke Was Weaponized by the Right. Republicans are crusading against wokeness. A history of wokeness and why marketers should think twice about it. How the word woke was hijacked to silence people of color. The problem with all that is they're now saying the quiet part out loud. I get what you don't want us using the word woke to describe some of your philosophy. I get it. It's because the word woke doesn't actually describe what you believe in. It doesn't. It meant integration originally. It meant integration. Garry Kasparov is not someone I have a good relationship with. He probably won't remember me at all. But I remember a particular dinner a few years ago where we were seated next to one another. It was shortly after the 2016 election, and we had to be separated by the host. It's one of these fancy private dinners I was very privileged and fortunate to be invited to. And we had to be separated by the host over the issue of whether Donald Trump was legitimately elected to the presidency or not. you can imagine my position. And if you imagine mine, you can figure out his. Gary Kasparov thought that Trump was a Russian agent. I haven't seen him speak much on that issue in the last few years. But he does have an important op-ed in the Wall Street Journal today on this point I was just talking about, woke. And his title is, or the title in the op-ed is, woke is a bad word for a real threat to American democracy. And he writes here, well, I take the Lincoln view, stand with any man that stands right when he's right and depart from him when he's wrong. He's right on this. He was wrong about Trump, but that's okay. The never Trumpers who embraced him hopefully will embrace him for this as well. He writes, the search is on for new words for old ideas. Cancel culture and woke have become overused and abused, part of a struggle to define one's political opponents, to dismiss ideas as not only wrong but intolerable. As a non-native English speaker, I am content to avoid rhetorical fashion and use older phrases. Call it the mob mentality, groupthinker, punitive neo-Puritan orthodoxy. It is the abuse of power, mostly social, to silence debate and paralyze the spread of any ideas that challenge the prevailing ideological dogma. It is the coordinated course of attempt to win a debate by ending debate, to punish rather than to educate. The leading practitioners of these tactics have two contradictory responses to criticism. First, and you well know all this, especially when you think about critical race theory in the schools. First, they say it isn't happening, that it doesn't exist, that drawing attention to it is a rhetorical whine to silence critics of the establishment and shield the privileged from accountability. Second, they blame the victims, calling them bad people with bad ideas who should be banished to make room for more diverse voices. Claiming you are fighting fire with fire can be used to justify any excess. The only way to fight back is to take freedom away from someone else. You see this all the time. My Exhibit A all day will stay as my Exhibit A today. And it's the parent quoted in the Arizona Republic who disagrees with our views on critical race theory, saying that we prefer our history whitewashed and want our kids and gender assigned at birth bathrooms, gender assigned at birth bathrooms, you know, where boys go to boys' bathrooms and girls go to girls' bathrooms. This parent thinks that she has the public on her side and is insulting us. This parent is acting as if all of society or a vast majority of society wants their kids not to be in gender assigned at birth bathrooms, that it's okay. This parent wants people to think that most people think it's not just okay, not just justifiable, but imperative that children decide what gender they are and thus what bathroom they want to go to. That's now the normal thinking, and that we should be ashamed for thinking otherwise. We should be ashamed for the thoughts we had about bathrooms 3 years ago. Well, we're not. We're not. But this is how they silence debate. And for good measure, this parent tells us we're of the same ilk that wants, as she puts it, both sides of the Holocaust taught. Both sides of the Holocaust taught. I don't even... What would be the both sides, by the way? The Holocaust was good, the Holocaust was bad? That would put a value judgment on things. The left doesn't like value judgments, or didn't. I guess they do now. I guess the other thing is what? It existed or it didn't exist? Would that be the both sides of the Holocaust? I don't know anyone on our side who has been promoting that nonsense. So not only do they lie in the most cruel forms to silence and shut us up, as Gary Kasparov, and shame us, as Gary Kasparov put it. But he says a lot more that I think is worth talking about, and we'll get to that in just a moment. Uh, Welcome back. I just we'll go to calls in a moment. I just wanted to finish this Garry Kasparov piece in the Wall Street Journal, talking about how the phrase woke is falling out of favor and how the left has been weaponizing language to shut down conservatives. That includes not only censorship, but shame. He writes, the politics of personal destruction have run amok. I've been friends, he writes, with Peter Thiel for years. I disagree with him on many things, especially lately. Fair enough. But the attacks on him have been disturbing. In his recent book, The Contrarian, one journalist, Max Chafin, assigns an ideology to Mr. Thiel, then defines it as fascist, and even tries to blame this concocted Thielism for the January 6th Capitol riot. There is little doubt that the book would never have come to be had Mr. Thiel not supported Donald Trump in 2016. But suddenly, a secretive libertarian tech investor with a complex history and identity, immigrant, gay, Stanford law grad, coastal elite, became simply evil. And Mr. Chafkin was quickly paid to fill hundreds of pages to support that preordained conclusion. Tearing down the powerful may be satisfying, if briefly, but remember who inevitably suffers most when justice is abandoned in favor of grievance and destruction. Black Lives Matter is a necessary idea, but it's been hijacked by leaders, he writes, who seek only power and who are willing to sacrifice their supposed beneficiaries to achieve it. Who will be harmed most when the police are defunded, the public education system wrecked? Not the elites. The Russian Revolution dispatched some wealthy landowners, but its natural outcome was a new form of slavery. was a new form of slavery under totalitarian communism. Of course, he writes, all in the name of equality and freedom. Putting ideology and politics ahead of reason, he writes, is as dangerous as putting them ahead of justice. Mr. Trump and his administration stated the possibility that COVID-19 originated in a Wuhan laboratory, a corresponding rise in hate crimes against Asians became a journalistic feast. The left's reaction to Mr. Trump's rhetoric was instructive. Anyone who mentioned the lab leak theory was assailed as pro-Trump. Social media companies removed posts mentioning it. But by January 2021, less than a year later, it was obvious that shutting down debate was the true anti-science position. Invaluable months were lost, time the Chinese Communist Party used to destroy data and spread disinformation about the virus's origins. We may never know the truth, Kasparov writes, but we do know there was a cover-up. By the way. I just want to ask a question here. I'm sure I know the answer. Has there been as much condemnation in the aggregate? Both sides put together, has there been as much condemnation of the Chinese Communist Party covering up and destroying the data of the Wuhan lab leak as there has been of Donald Trump? Okay. Just asking. Increasing numbers of Americans, Kasparov says, believe their freedom is under attack, and I agree. Anti-democratic forces are on the rise. Schools are being pressured to remove books and cancel professors for spreading the wrong ideas. These sentiments are all too familiar to me and to anyone who has survived life in a dictatorship. There was a reason Kasparov accepted There was a reason Kasparov accepted that every Eastern European I met who had moved to America supports Republican candidates and supported them more vociferously and ardently in the last election than I have ever seen before in my lifetime. Could it be, could it just be that they heard things from the Democratic Party and the left that reminded them of the Altland, the old land, the places they fled? It cannot happen here is something we used to convince ourselves. Well, it certainly can. Did this get two plays on Seinfeld or one? One when George was at a new place of business, right, where George was working. And what was the other one? When Kramer went to work and the guy tried to fire him and Kramer said, I was never really hired. And the boss says, that's what makes this so difficult. Okay. Do you ever have a dream that that could happen to us one of these days? Jim Ryan says, well, you know, well, we're actually never really hired. John is in Phoenix. Hi, John.
Hi, Seth. I just don't remember who it was who made a reference to the other side of the Holocaust, but unless I'm mistaken.
Oh, let me help you out. There was a column in the Arizona Republic, and Lori Roberts was talking to a parent who supports critical race theory, a parent who opposes my, let's say, I don't know your views, but opposes us trying to end critical race theory. And this parent, I'm guessing very liberal or left-wing parent, says that my side wants to hear both sides of things like the Holocaust. So I'm quoting a parent in Scottsdale.
Okay, well, I can't speak for her, but in my opinion, she's probably referencing Holocaust revisionism rather than the claim that the Germans were justified and they did a good thing. They're just claiming that it wasn't as bad as it's been made out, and so on and so forth. There's been some controversy over that, and unless I'm mistaken, that's probably what she's talking about.
That it did or didn't happen, that it did or didn't happen in to the extent that most history says it did?
Yeah, to the extent, I think, is the main arguing point. I mean, there are people who say the number of Jews who died in the Holocaust was closer to 1 million than 6 million, and that cyanide wasn't used.
Oh, yeah. There's people that say a lot of these things. I've never heard anyone on our side saying it should be taught in schools, ever, ever. I've never seen that person. I've never heard that. I've never seen that textbook. I've never seen that scholarship designed for elementary and secondary schools. In fact, the only scholarship I've seen on it that got any reach at all, was scholarship that was supported by the left, including the likes of Noam Chomsky. You know, the notion that because we oppose bad history, the notion that because we oppose false history, the notion that we oppose everything in America having a racial component to it, the notion that we oppose everything about America came from bad things and none of the good things that happened came without bad actions, has to include the idea that we don't think the Holocaust was noxious or as bad as the historians say it was, is nothing more than another silencing tactic and lie about our movement. If it's not a lie about our movement, it's a fundamental misunderstanding of it, and they suffer from a fundamental misunderstanding of it. And it starts when they say we want our history whitewashed. We absolutely don't want our history whitewashed. And anyone who has been following the textbook wars for the last 40 years or the history wars, the history teaching wars for the last 40 years, understands that the debate until now has been about emphasizing more American history, not less. In fact, American history, this is a good opportunity to remind people, is our children's worst subject. It is their worst subject. 50+% more than 50% of American high school seniors graduate high school with an F in American history, according to the National Assessment of Education Progress, known as the gold standard of measurement of these things. Now, if you don't know, or if half the country doesn't know its history, think about how subject you are to those who want to propagandize. Find me an American history textbook that you grew up with. Find me the one you grew up with if you still have it. And you tell me what it whitewashed. The most popular American history textbook before Howard Zinn was written by Henry Steele Commager. And Henry Steele Commager, interestingly enough, was a progressive. And it was a damned good American history book. Because he was a progressive from the old school. He was a progressive from the old school. And he wrote it with another professor named Samuel Eliot Morrison. And the last version I looked up online had over 80 mentions of slavery. Over 80. None of them, by the way, positive. Okay? None of them positive. And none of them trying to do what this phantasmagorical concept of teaching both sides of things like slavery or the Holocaust is being imputed towards us. None of us believe that on this side. I don't know if they just don't know what we are about, or if they do know and are lying about it deliberately. I do think it's a mix of both. I do think it's a mix of both, which is why it's tragedy to me, tragedy, that the response is to shut us up because they're not going to learn from us. Those that aren't being ideologically bullish, those that aren't being ideologically rigid, those who aren't steeped in Marxism, those who are just, you know, going along to get along, they'll never learn from us if they succeed in shutting us up, and that is why they want to succeed in shutting us up. This is why the ACLU existed in the first place. This is why teacher tenure existed in the first place. It's an interesting thing to go through wars over the First Amendment and freedom of speech and normative absolutes for over a century, only having to have won them to now destroy them. Reminds me of what Harry Jaffa said about our founding. In 1776, we were nothing to be everything. Today, we're everything promising to be nothing. Thanks for spending some of your afternoon with us. I really appreciate it and appreciate all of you as well. I'll close with where I opened in the appendix of 1984, the book by George Orwell. The appendix is an interesting thing worth reading as much as the book itself. It describes the principles of newspeak, what newspeak means. And George Orwell writes that the purpose of newspeak was not only to provide a medium of expression for the worldview and mental habits proper to the devotees of socialism, but to make all other modes of thought impossible. Think about that. All other modes of thought impossible. This is indeed the socialist project. This is indeed the Marxist project. All other modes of thought impossible. There's a there's a Twitter account called Students for Socialism at ASU. Has quite a few followers. Who knows if the followers agree with it or not? That's nothing you ever really know. But it has quite a few followers. And everything you need to know, really, everything you need to know about this movement is in their Twitter description. I'll read it to you. Students for Socialism at Arizona State University is a socialist, revolutionary, Marxist club. Our mission is to end capitalism and fight for socialism. Okay. You get a lot in there. You get revolutionary. You get the obvious, which is sometimes denied, that socialism is Marxism. And that their mission is to end the very system that keeps ASU open in the first place. Just like the multiculturalists and progressives of today want to shut down everything that gave them power in the first place. It's unique to Western Civ, the diversity of ideas and free speech. You kill it, and you accomplish what George Orwell said they were trying to accomplish. Until tomorrow, God bless you all. Class dismissed.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.